It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. Big show this week, all around the hunt for Mayo's new manager. Colm Keyes joins us to discuss that, look at some of the candidates, look at the possibility of an outsider coming into the race late on. We've got a couple more weeks before the nominations close, of course. News on that as well. News on the McHale Park debt and restructuring, and a discussion about what that might mean for the future of Mayo GA. That's what's on the show this week, but what's on the podcast feed at patreon.com/Mayo Podcasts. Well, the place where you can find all the news around Mayo Ladies' superb victory, a podcast coming up with Saoirse Lally. That's out tomorrow. Mike Finnerty chatting to herself ahead of the semi-final against Kerry and looking back at that brilliant win over Cork at the weekend. Of course, you will have heard Cora Staunton on our Patreon feed last week setting the scene and highlighting why Mayo had such a great chance when so many people didn't see it coming. There's the full review of the Mayo Miners straight after the final whistle on Friday night, their defeat to Galway. Nigel Reap joined us. Some really, really good stuff in that. And of course, the paper this week is jam-packed full of coverage around all of those events. But for starters, and for today's show, we're focused on, well, what's the talk of the town, really? It's about Mayo, a new manager. The suggestion is from the county board that they hope to have someone in place by the first weekend in September. That's just some of the news that you're going to hear in the next few minutes. Big thanks to our sponsors, our main sponsors, Oxford Arms in London. That's your place to go if you want to watch Gaelic football at any point in time, not least the All-Ireland final coming up in just a little over a week. And also a big thanks to Nigel Reap off some print supplies. He's been a superb backer of the podcast from day one, and we really appreciate his support now. In the meantime, enjoy the interview. Welcoming Colm Keyes back to the podcast. Off-season for us, Colm, not off-season for you at the moment, but we're just getting our head around lots of bit of news in the paper. You've had a busy weekend. Thanks for joining us again.
No problem, Rob. Good to talk to you and to Mike there as well. We see a bit of him, obviously, in Croke Park over the weekend, so...
Yeah, my pass is revoked once Mayo get knocked out, but Mike has a little bit of a guest pass for a few more weeks. All right, Mike.
Yeah, what's this wee business and off season, Rob? I don't know. I don't know who you're talking about there, really. Yeah, it's there's another few weeks to go in the championship, and I'm sure our Galway listeners will love to hear you talking about off season.
Well, look, we have Colm on to talk ostensibly about the Mayo manager position and some of the news that's breaking on that, just to give us that kind of wider national perspective, and a little bit about the McHale Park loan repayments that we've. That's been covered so well in the papers this week. So I guess that's what I'm talking about, Mike. But I see your point. Sure, Ballinrobe were playing Westport at the weekend in the club championship. Sure, the wheel keeps on turning in the GA. Nothing ever changes. Football is all our minds. Colm, there's a bit to talk about. But our minds right now are on the new manager position. And it's going to be a big story in the next 6 or 8 weeks once the football dies down. Who's going to be the next Mayo manager?
Yeah, obviously Mayo being one of the most prominent and successful teams of the last decade. Of course, there's going to be interest. Obviously, they dropped off a bit this year against Kerry, but they're still the nucleus of a really, really strong squad there. And one, whichever manager or whoever it is that inherits it, is walking into a pretty good position. I know all year you'll weigh up how things have gone and all of that, but ultimately, without two of their most prolific forwards, that obviously held them back this year. So, sure, it's a big decision, and the type of profile and the type of manager that Mayo need is something now that the committee put together is really going to think long and hard about what they want out of it. Do they want another cycle of development, or do they go for the shortest and quickest route to what they feel is potentially success that's out there, and whether that means going outside the county and knocking down the doors of some of the most experienced managers out there that may be available. But what I would say about that is there are not many candidates out there either that would fit the profile of what Mayo would require in that regard. So the idea that there's a golden management ticket out there, I think a lot of counties ultimately find out that, well, that's not really the case.
And who would you be picking out off the top of your head if someone turned around you on the street tomorrow and said, who might be the Mayo manager? Who would be the first names that jump out at your head from an outside perspective?
Well, again, the profile of the Mayo team right now is that they are close. They are close, despite this year, and it seems that they are getting further away from, but they're still an attractive team that could, with momentum, really, really get close to another All-Ireland final, or they could get back to where they have been. There isn't any doubt about that right now. So does that demand one of these successful managers maybe to give it that last push with maybe a fresh approach from outside? And obviously, and this happens when counties have a vacancy and they want the best, and there's a perception that the best lies beyond the county boundaries. Now, I'm not so sure is that prevalent in Mayo right now. There's a couple of obviously internal candidates that would be, obviously there'd be about three that have had some success with underage teams and some success with other counties as well. So we just park that for a minute. When you look at the outside reach, you know, you have Jim McGuinness, who is on everybody's list. He was obviously approached by Down last year and negotiations were ongoing, and obviously it made the public domain and he was out at that stage. But my information is that he certainly was talking to them at one stage in that process. But I'm not so sure right now that he would, I still think he's on a path to soccer management. He's invested a lot in that. I think Mayo would be attractive for him, for sure. He'd know that they're close enough, but whether he would commit to it, I think there's a better chance, let's say, of Eamon Fitzmaurice. The other name that's always going to be thrown out there is Eamon Fitzmaurice. Eamon Fitzmaurice is a principal in Dingle. Can you really see him hopping into his car when school finishes at whatever time? I mean, Dingle to Tralee alone could be 40 minutes journey for him before he starts to climb up the West Coast. It's just not feasible. It's just not feasible. And Eamon Fitzmaurice certainly won't be there, because I know other counties have eyed him up, and the same reason is geographically, work-wise, just not suitable for him. Obviously, there'll be some Dublin names thrown into the mix, but that's not realistic either. So for that, let's call it big bang management approach. There's McGuinness and there's also Malachy O'Rourke. Now, Malachy O'Rourke has already turned down Meath. He's with Glen, a club that could conceivably win in Derry, nearly the hardest county championship there is, could conceivably follow the Kilcoo. They brought Kilcoo to extra time. They could get to an Ulster club and they could progress to All-Ireland club competition later in the year and into next year. So all of that suggests that maybe Malachy O'Rourke is not in a position. Now, I believe, and I stand to be correct in this, that he has retired from teaching in Ballygawley. That would give him a lot of freedom. And obviously, he had a lot of success with Monaghan, given Monaghan's profile and status and where they were. And he did a very good job with them, certainly in his early years, probably the first 4 or 5 years, they won 2 Ulster titles. And he really brought them up a level. He's a well-respected coach or manager, and he brings with him a ready-made team, a couple of others as well. Ryan Porter is his sidekick as well from Tyrone. So look, they're the two that I would say that would be most in mind of those, let's say, outside big bang candidates. I think most unlikely that Malachy O'Rourke would do it. I think he's club commitments, and there are probably other jobs that could crop up in Ulster in the next couple of years that would interest him and might be more convenient. The McGuinness one, I don't know. I really don't know. I presume his path is still soccer. So ultimately, I think Mayo will probably end up looking within, unless there's a candidate out there that I'm not aware of. But those three, Fitzmaurice, O'Rourke and McGuinness, would really be the ones that they would be targeting more than others, I would have thought.
On that column, like, and as much as, and this is more hypothetical and just your own opinion, but is it something that you'd like stop and go, let's say McGuinness got it, would you go, that's actually different, or I can't wait to see what this brings? Or you can imagine there's a lot of people in Mayo, a lot of football fans who feel, oh, we need an outside voice. Do you understand that line of thinking? And do you think there's actually a bit of value in an outside voice?
I think for this Mayo team right now, there is a value in an outside voice. And I think there is a value in pursuing someone like McGuinness, who would really, really electrify things, I think. And I think once if he was to commit to it, and again, I'm expressing my doubt about that, but if he was to commit to a project like Mayo in very short term, through a very short term, and that would be a short term project, you are talking a year, you're talking 2 years here, I think it would electrify Mayo. I think he would invest a lot into it, for sure. you know, it's a long time since he has managed two. He's out since 2014. Things have moved on since his time, but he would be adaptable and he would be innovative. And it certainly would be a very, very interesting dynamic. But again, my doubt is there that he would commit to something like that. But you never know.
Do you think, just with the candidates that are there then from within, have you looked at the field outside of Mayo? How well is Mike Solon known? Ray Dempsey, they're two of the names that are there. Obviously, Kevin McStay is well known. Obviously, Stephen Rochford is well known around the country. But your thoughts on that, on those four to start with anyways?
Well, Ray Dempsey has a good record with Knockmore. They've played good football, and obviously he's brought through a lot of young players very, very quickly to win those county titles. Obviously, they didn't advance beyond Connacht, which would have been a disappointment for them. But the fact is, the development of young players under his management was quite good, and obviously he has a pedigree going further back with Mayo. And Mike Solon has a more recent successful underage pedigree too, with Mayo, and as we know, he was in the frame at one stage before James Horan got it. So in terms of a live candidate, he'd be a very live candidate too. Kevin McStay, I think, got burned in 2014, 2015, and he did seem to stress, if I recall, his parting statement when he left Roscommon. From what I recall, he really doubled down and emphasised that he would not be returning to inter-county management. And I presume that holds. Having said that, the lure of your county team, I don't think he'd enter the process again. But I think if the committee were going to get together and say, maybe Kevin McStay is our man to build a team, and they called down to Roscommon and they said, Kevin, we want you, and we want you to put together a team and bring it forward, I think he'd be tempted. I think the 2018 statement might, it's often, quite often, not worth the paper it's written on these things. So, you know, and I would imagine the temptation there for Kevin would be strong.
I was really enjoying that column there, because I'll be honest, like, I put together a short list last week for the paper of it was the first short list, but the more I thought about it last week and the more I've thought about it since, I just have a feeling that the next Mayo manager probably will come from the five names that we floated last week. And just for the record, they were presented in alphabetical order. I'm going to present them again in alphabetical order, because everybody right now is reading into everything. It was Ray Dempsey, Kevin McStay, Stephen Rochford, Maurice Sheridan, Michael Solon. You know, I'd feel they're the five candidates locally that would be the strongest five. And I think there's another group then that obviously are cropping up in conversations as well, in no particular order. You've got John Mahan, who's always going to feature when he's unattached and when there's a Mayo position vacant. Liam McHale is back in club management in Belmullet. I have no doubt Liam would have aspirations of managing at the very top level if the opportunity arose again. Damien Mulligan is a really highly regarded manager, coach, brought Belmullet to the county final last year. And I honestly think Michael Moyles has done such a spectacular job with the Mayo ladies this year, like lost something like 18 of last year's squad. He made a league semi-final. He's now in the All-Ireland semi-final. And I think Michael Moyles at some point is going to throw his hat in the ring, either as a manager or as a coach of the Mayo senior men's team. And then, of course, Kieran McDonald, his name is going to be linked, I'd say, with a lot of different management teams over the next few weeks, because he's obviously involved with James Horan, and he would be a big name to bring with you on your ticket if you were letting your name go forward. But just in relation to the outside names, I'd agree with Cullum. I think Jim McGuinness, Malachy O'Rourke, probably the two most likely outside candidates to be approached and may or may not let their names go forward. I think the Eamon Fitzmaurice one as well. Geographically, it just doesn't seem to add up. Now, I was in Croke Park over the weekend. I know Colin was up there as well. There was talk around the press box on Saturday evening and on Sunday. that, you know, a number of outside candidates had been approached or had got a call or there had been contact made. No idea as to where exactly that contact came from, but quote unquote Mayo had contacted them. Now, I noticed Dermot Butler told Michael Gallagher in the Mayo News today that he certainly hadn't contacted anybody as far as he was aware. None of the other senior officers had. But I thought that was interesting that, you know, whether it's true or not, but I heard it from pretty good sources that, you know, calls were being made, there was contact being made, that the ball was rolling. I think in terms of the local guys, one or two of them, I gather, are at a fairly advanced stage of putting together backroom teams, or certainly trying to, ahead of the nomination process. And then one or two of them are definitely, I'd say, mulling over their options. I think one or two of them are waiting to see what way the wind is blowing. That'd be my read at the moment.
Just a couple of points there, Mike, and they're more of an aside than anything else. You mentioned Michael Miles. I'm finding more and more that there's such a crossover, a coaching crossover now between ladies football and Gaelic football now in terms of movement and ability, and as a almost as a breeding ground for future Gaelic games, Gaelic football coaches at intercounty level too. There's a couple of very good coaches in the background of the Meath ladies team, for instance. And then you have Maxie Curran and Mark McHugh with the Donegal ladies, and obviously they beat Dublin last weekend and have turned that over. You've mentioned Michael Morris, and then obviously Mick Bohan with Dublin. Now Mick was with Dublin with Jim Gavin as a skills coach and with Clare. But it is certainly a breeding ground for future and potential intercounty Gaelic football managers and coaches right now. And the other point you mentioned is that there'll always be approaches and people would be sounded out on that. And that may not have come from the county board. I mean, you'll always have people independently picking up a phone and asking a manager or meeting them on the street and asking them, are they interested? And then going to some of the county board officers and saying, he might be interested. And people mean well by this because they want the best potential candidate. So, you know, God knows who made that approach, if those approaches were made. It just happens like that. It could even be down to a journalist asking a candidate, are you interested in it? There's many means by which this happens. I don't know. You have better information as to know who was approached. But there's a sounding out process too here as well, that those on the committee discreetly and privately like to know which direction they're heading in. And I suppose the formalities will take place at a later date, but they do like to erect the signpost, shall we say, to know what direction is best, because quite quickly they may discover that there isn't really an outside outlet here for Mayo, and that the search must really be focused on within.
Colm, were you impressed with Galway's approach to hiring Henry Shefflin?
It certainly caught me by surprise in terms of how discreet that was. Because all the indications in early that week was that Davy Fitzgerald was getting that job. And I think that might have been the impression from Davy too. But Henry had been in the mix when Shane O'Neill got it. He had a conversation with some element of Galway officialdom. And obviously his Ballyhale connections at the time kept him there. But obviously there was contact remained. And I think he did probably come late in the day and a firm decision around his, let's say, candidacy and acceptance came very late. So late, in fact, that I don't think there was any real chance of that spreading around. But certainly all the indications were that Davy was in the frame for that. Or maybe Galway officials allowed that to be the conversation around it and it provided them with a screen. If so, and that does happen too. That's another trick that they will put it out there that another candidate is the focus, and it gives them a cover. And I've seen that a few times. I've seen it with I've seen that in a number of occasions actually, where there is a lead candidate that isn't really in the frame for it, and that allows some secrecy to bring in who they really want. So yeah, that's a tactic that committees do use from time to time. And they use the media for that very, very skillfully too. I have to say. So you have to be careful what you're buying, lads.
Yeah, but that's interesting because like there's a lot of talk about how well the committee they put together and the format. I think we were talking to you. You obviously saw Edwin wrote in the Mayo News today about just getting the process right. Mayo have got the process horrendously wrong over the last three decades on a number of occasions. How important is it that they get this one right?
Ah, sure. It's always important to get it right. I think I don't recall the last clean. I suppose James Horan taking over the last time. I know, obviously, Mike Solon was in the frame and there was some discussion around that. But I think ultimately that was.
I think it was more to do, Cullum, that one with Stephen Rochford's departure. That was the
I think part. So, yeah, yeah. But again, that was probably it. And he had obviously chosen new selectors at that point. Just after the Kildare defeat he had. So he had gone on in the belief that he would be manager. And obviously then it turned and it became obvious to him that the winds were getting chillier around that. But I suppose historically that it hasn't been all that smooth. You mentioned Galway there, Rob. I think Eddie O'Sullivan was on the appointments committee.
That's kind of where it was coming from, yeah.
That was probably a shrewd move in terms of weighing up from a broader sports point of view. And I'm sure there's plenty within Mayo that would have those type of connections, even you know, from a sporting background and a political background and other backgrounds that obviously there would be quite a high degree of competency there that they could lean on for something like this. I suppose, look, of course, it's right to get the process right, but the process is expressions of interest. But they can also do their own thing too, and that's fair as well. It doesn't have to. Expression of interest isn't a guarantee ever that you will get a clean run at this. It is just to cover those who the committee themselves may not be aware would want the job.
Yeah, that's brilliantly put. Before we finish the manager talking, Mike, I'm going to ask you about just give us a bit of a broad picture in the McHale Park loan and get Colm's views on that. I have a bit of a left field question for you, Colm, but it is that. We do tend to center the conversation for a job as high profile as Mayo around people who have big management experience. But is there anything in a, and again, this is pure fantasy talk, sure, would they be interested, but in a Kieran Donaghy, in a Tomás O'Shea's with Offaly, in a Peter Canavan who has a background. Again, I'm picking names from the sky. They may be laughing if they were listening to this podcast, but there are plenty of Mayo fans. If I threw those three names out as part of a management team, possibly even as a manager, they might be like, I'd be interested.
Of course there is, of course. And I suppose that's down to the committee, but I would be of the view that a very experienced manager that has had some track record of success in recent years, it may be the best fit for Mayo in their current guise. That would be, and I'm only talking a year, 2 years, and that's to cover some of those players that would probably be still in the starting line. Do Mayo need now a new cycle of development, player development? That's what James Horan ultimately undertook. Back in 2018 was a new cycle of development. A lot of players have been brought through. They are ready to go again. So does it need another development period? I don't think it does. I think the best and shortest route is someone that has been down that route before. But when those doors probably shut, there are some very credible candidates that Mike has mentioned there. All in the mix that would bring what they could to it. But you mentioned, Naaman Fitzmaurice hadn't a huge amount of management experience. He had a year with the Kerry under-21s. He was a selector with Jack previous to that. But in terms of manager in his own right, no, he hadn't. But within 2 years, he had an All-Ireland title without Colm Cooper. So there are times when you will hit upon a very, very good, recently retired ex-player who could bring that on. And I'm quite sure they could be in Mayo too.
Just maybe, Rob, as well, to tidy up the loose ends, just going by Dermot Butler's conversation with us last night, Friday fortnight is the deadline for the nominations to be in. So that'll just give people an idea. We're going to have another fortnight of speculation and ball hopping. He's hoping, or the committee are hoping, that you'll have a manager in place by the first weekend in September, which will be the start of the club championship here in Mayo, or at the latest, the second round, which I gather is a week later. And then there's been a lot of talk about this, the famous, it's becoming the most famous operations manual in the GAA. I was there at the county board meeting the night it was sworn in, as it were, or effectively adopted. And let me tell you, there wasn't half as much talk about it that night. I think delegates were keen to get out the door and get home. But now all of a sudden, when you have a big management appointment, the operations manual, which is only in place since last year, the page relating to the appointment of managers is the most important page of them all, because it basically lays out the guidelines by which this process will play out. Now, there is scope there for the executive, I suppose, to tweak it, or to, what did they say last week, to do a preliminary review of it. But essentially, there will be a HR company now, we're told, overseeing the process to make sure all the boxes are ticked. You're going to have three or four members of the executive on the interview panel. You're going to have a former Mayo player. You're going to have a HR expert. And then this is the bit I like. You're going to have another. It is literally written as another on the policy document. So, you know, you're going to have 6-7 people interviewing. I know it's the exact same procedure, more or less, that was used to appoint Sean Dean last year and used to appoint Maurice Sheridan. So it'll be pretty much the exact rigmarole anybody has to go through when they're going for a job in the quote-unquote real world. You go in, you state your case, you make a PowerPoint presentation or your slides or whatever way you do it. You're put under a bit of pressure, I'm sure, by the people behind the table. And you're scored in different categories, and then may the best man win. And, you know, outside of we want the right man for the job, and Colin mentioned this at the outset, actually, and I think we'll have to try and drill down into this, Rob, over the next few weeks. What do the executive of Mayo GAA, what do they want in the next manager, specifically, beyond the kind of the catchphrase, we want the right man for the job, we want the best man for the job? What does that mean? Because I was saying to you earlier today, right now, and we've talked about this a lot, and we've put out feelers, and we've been kind of keeping our ear to the ground. Right now, if I had to write down the person, you know, the name of the person I think would be the next Mayo manager and put it in an envelope, I'd be struggling. You know, I'd be struggling with any conviction to say I think it will be this person, because everyone is keeping their cards so close to their chest here locally. I gather the few people that were contacted in a roundabout way over the weekend said thanks but no thanks, or politely declined. Certainly the first approach, there are people outside the county. So to my mind, right now it's wide open, but we are still at least 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away from an appointment being made anyway.
Colin, Mike's just raised a question in my head. What are the characteristics required for the Mayo job? Like, what is the Mayo job compared to any other job in the country from your perspective?
I mean, is it any different to a Kerry job, a Dublin job? There's probably the same pressures at this stage, I would have thought. Same as Tyrone. I mean, it's in that category. So I presume I can't see it any different than that. It isn't a development job. This particular job isn't a development job. This is the shortest route Mayo can take, obviously, to winning in All-Ireland. I think when James Horan took it, there was a little bit of acceptance that things were going to change. 4 years on, there's a lot of players have come through, and I don't think the development card and we need time to rebuild really cuts it with Mayo. So the shortest route, to my mind, the shortest route is to one of the most experienced managers that they can get their hands on. I really think it needs a very experienced hand here. The time for development and the time for a little bit of risk or gamble will probably come in 2 years' time for Mayo. But right now, in my view, I think the shortest fix is to get the most experienced man they can get their hands on that has a track record.
Colm, last question on it, right? And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but kind of I hope I am a little bit at the same time. When you come down to Mayo in September to cover one of the rounds of the club championship, who do you expect to be interviewing at the side of a pitch, probably asking them what are their aspirations for their first season as Mayo manager? Like, I'm kind of getting the sense there from what you're saying, you have in your mind's eye, you think this is down to two or three people, I'd say. But if all things were equal, if all the people we spoke about over the last half an hour throw their hats in the ring and they all put together good backroom teams and, you know, everyone is trying, as like you'd say about a race at Cheltenham, who gets it for you?
I said at the outset, I don't think Jim McGuinness will go for it. I'd be surprised, but if he did, he'd be the obvious candidate if Mayo could, obviously. I would think McGuinness would be the lead candidate for what Mayo want right now, but I don't think he'll do it. So therefore, you're going back. And I think the three candidates, I couldn't really distinguish between the three of them. They would all bring something. They would all bring something different. They all have had their own successes in the past, and really, it would depend. Really, you know, whose vision of it, and who brings the most energy between Ray Dempsey, Mike Solon, and if the management committee thought that way, Kevin McStay too. I think those three would all be potentially strong candidates in their own right once the focus came back within the county. I wouldn't see Stephen Rochford going back in there again. I don't think he would go back in. I could be wrong. I don't think it'd be the right fit for him. Mayo obviously have gone back a few times with John O'Mahony in the past and James Horan this time. I think they will look elsewhere. I would say one of those three within if the search outside quickly shuts down.
The bullet points, Mike, for our listeners, of a brilliant piece again by Edwin today on the McHale Park loan. Cullum's looked over it for us, so we just wanted to quickly get his wider national perspective. But yeah, the story today, a phenomenal piece of work, in fairness, by yourself last week, but Edwin's really done the deep dive.
Yeah, just, I suppose, a brief summary. This is not a new story by any manner of means, but the reason it's back in the headlines in the last week or two is because at a county board meeting a couple of weeks ago, the delegates were told that a new formal arrangement was being entered into between Mayo GEA and the National Finance Committee at Croke Park, that for the next 10 years, starting on the 1st of October of this year, Mayo GEA have committed to pay €25,000 a month towards the repayments on their loan for the redevelopment of McHale Park, which stretches way back to 2007, 2008, that sort of an era. And we got such a reaction to last week's story that we felt it was in the public interest to develop that story on this week. And Edwin, as you said, did a sort of a deep dive into the figures and just pulled on the thread a little bit. And I suppose the headline speaks for itself. McHale Park loan repayments continue to cripple Mayo GEA. They're looking at paying $3 million over the next 10 years. We are finding it difficult to get exact numbers from Mayo GEA around the amount outstanding on the loan and also the term of the loan. But we've been able to go back to previous information and extrapolate from that. Round about €7.8 million still outstanding. And if the loan was to be left at the current repayments, you'd be talking about somewhere in the region of 2057. That'd be about 50 years after the project started, that Mayo might be finally debt-free from this development. And I suppose the only other thing to add, while all this money is being repaid, we're now hearing as well that further work now needs to start on the stadium. The roof of the media tower has to be replaced. The stand needs some work. And obviously there's the running repairs that goes with any big stadium. So it's just, I suppose, really to bring it out into the spotlight again and to underline the point that, you know, clubs and Mayo supporters need to be aware here that Mayo are trying to win All-Irelands. They're trying to develop football teams against the backdrop of paying €25,000 a month for the foreseeable future.
What were your thoughts on that, Cullen, when you saw those figures?
Well, I'm not surprised because those figures have been, you know, as of from last December or whenever it was, the debt repayments have been coming down all the time for Mayo, obviously with restructures, but obviously the term of debt is stretching out further. So obviously it is quite a burden for Mayo. There is no doubt about that. It doesn't allow them to operate maybe in the way infrastructurally in other areas. Obviously, the training pitch issue was something James Horan brought up after the after the defeat to Kerry. One of the things I recall him saying is that they really had to tour the county to get a venue, which is something Tyrone and Kerry don't have to do. And obviously Dublin and most counties actually have, and certainly most counties at Mayo's level and above and quite a few below have their own centres of excellence. And it really is a big miss for Mayo at this stage not to have it. But as long as this debt is here, it's going to be very, very difficult. Now, obviously, I know there was plans there and grand plans and things went askew in recent years. But without that, without a centre of excellence that they can, that they, the inter-county teams can, inter-county teams can consider a base, it does leave Mayo a little bit short-changed. And obviously, with the scale of that stadium debt and those repayments over a long period of time, it does make it difficult. Having said that, Mayo do put a lot of money into the running of their inter-county teams every year, obviously to give them the best chance at elite level. But that's something they also have to look at, because Mayo will routinely each year be in the top four or five counties who's, and with what they spend on their teams. And that includes some of the big jewel counties. Obviously, Dublin and Cork will always figure highly. So too will Galway. But they have hurling and football teams operating later into the year and at a more elite level, notwithstanding Mayo have, you know, they have a decent level of hurling too, obviously. But at that level, Mayo, with just really a flagship senior football team, and probably a less demanding hurling team, find themselves in that mix. So it's something, you know, you can say, you know, we need in further debt reduction, or we need smaller repayments or something like that. But I don't think that will be easily given as long as the spend on inter-county teams remains as high. So it's a tricky situation for Mayo. They want to remain obviously at elite level, at inter-county level, and at the same time have a more manageable stadium debt that maybe would allow them then to pursue a centre of excellence. But they're not the only county. They are not the only county that are mired in stadium debt.
Colm, can I just ask you, because this is something that comes up a good bit in our office. Like, when you think back over the level of success Mayo have had over the last 10 or 12 years, you know, top two, top four, all the Connacht titles, won a National League. Does it surprise you that, you know, commercially, they didn't maybe tap into that level of success more? That, you know, could more have been done over the 10 or 12 years off the pitch to really reap the benefits of, you know, being one of the most recognisable, marketable, successful Gaelic football teams in the country? Because, you know, I kind of get the sense sometimes that there were opportunities missed. You know, I can never sort of understand why more wasn't made financially or from a financial point of view. Okay, Mayo get to an All-Ireland final. There was a big rush then for 2 or 3 weeks to try and obviously offset costs around preparing the team and paying for hotels. But, you know, in terms of a longer term vision, or is that maybe a legacy of obviously all the officers are volunteers? There's no full-time employees. There was a commercial manager in place for a couple of years, and then, of course, COVID hit. But you know the point I'm trying to get to? Could and should Mayo have done more to tap into the success on the field?
I would think they should have, yeah, for sure. You look at Kerry, and you look at the development in Currans, over 7 million. By and large, that's paid for now, and that's their centre of excellence. That's not Fitzgerald Stadium or Austin Stack Park, which are two reasonably high quality venues. I wouldn't say the stand in either at either venue is of the spec that the Mayo stand is, which is, you know, which is fairly significant in terms of a provincial ground. But if you look at Currans and development there, how they were able to tap into their diaspora right across the east coast of America and to London, they had some great international benefactors there that were really able to get behind the Currans project. And the current chairman, Patrick O'Sullivan, he's back now, and he was chairman previous to Tim Murphy. he's a lot of connections. He's a lot of connections in America that was able to drive that. And they were able to bring literally a past player's tour to all these counties and generate through golf classics and through functions and all of that. It worked really well for them. I mean, you had Bomber and Darrow Shea and Tomas O'Shea. You had so many going over on those trips, and they really were able to tap into the Kerry diaspora to drive that. So they were able to bring the debt down on Currans, which it cost over $7.5 million. Similar to Tyrone in Garvahy, which they would be the two state-of-the-art training facilities that I'm aware of. Obviously, there's a lot of good ones around, but those two really stand out in terms of spec. And Club Tyrone were big drivers in that too. So a very, very effective Club Tyrone to help support that. But I would notice it year on year, Mike. Tyrone don't spend nearly what Mayo spend on their inter-county teams. That's for sure. Kerry are probably a little bit more equitable there. So to answer your question, all of that, I am surprised that more hasn't been generated to be able to manage the McHale Park stadium debt. Which is in the order of, you say, is it 8 million? A bit less?
Yeah, give or take. I suppose it's only really in the last couple of years we've seen Hastings Insurance take over the naming rights of the stadium from Elvery's. Port West have gone on the back of the jersey now. That's a new development as well. You know, but it's really only in the last couple of years that you've seen movement around corporate sponsorship. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here, but it always struck me as odd that in a county like Mayo, where there's an insatiable appetite for football and the senior inter-county football team, that you can't walk into your local shop and get your Mayo GAA milk, your Mayo GAA bread, ice cream, you name it, that there are so many companies based here in Mayo that would seem to be tailor-made for those sort of things. It just seemed like a missed opportunity, and that's just at a very base level, you know.
But you mentioned there at the outset, Mike, that you weren't really sure what the term of the debt is now. You said at the outset, didn't you? You weren't quite certain about how long it was, but that should be common knowledge. And if it's not, that has the impact of creating a them and us between clubs and ordinary members and the county board. When there's not full disclosure on everything attached to the stadium and its debt, because ultimately the stadium and its debt, it's the responsibility of the county board. But ultimately the drop down is it's the responsibility of the county and the clubs and the members of those clubs. And there should be complete buy-in, and the whole picture should be disclosed to allow for a better buy-in on that and say, we have this debt, we must manage it. What can we do to bring it down and make it more manageable and not just keep it within? If that's the case, I'm not sure if that's the case, that there isn't full disclosure about how much it's been. And yes, a further renegotiation with Croke Park. But Croke Park aren't just going to be writing off some of that without something back. And that may come with a more constrained budget around team expenditure or other aspects, but more likely team expenditure. And that's something that Mayo really, really have to balance. But I would think it as a priority. I think a centre of excellence really is that for Mayo in the present day, given how all the rivals, obviously with the exception of Dublin, who train their teams in DCU and obviously have Abbottstown, but they have large tracts of land in the North County they have Hollystown, and they also have the Spa Well developments. They have the land there, which are earmarked for future pitches and possibly training centre too. So, but they have DCU right now, and the senior team have Inishvale. So they have bases. They use Inishvale in the winter time, and they go to DCU then when the evening's Lenten. And they have a base there, a hub that they use, it's for the senior team. That's how they go about it. For Mayo to be nomadic at this stage really is a drawback for them.
And just to tidy that up, Colm, there, in relation to the training pitches, that has come up in a few conversations I've been in recently. Whoever is the next Mayo senior manager, I don't see any way they're not going to end up in the same predicament as James Horan did earlier this year, because we were told at the county board meeting last week there are very preliminary plans to develop an AstroTurf full-size pitch at Mulvey Park, at the back of the McHale Park stand, shall we say, you know, in the not too distant future. And then two existing pitches will be modified. So basically they'll create one new pitch, they'll modify two existing ones, and that will alleviate some of the problem. But that's not going to be done, I wouldn't imagine, anytime soon, because first of all, it has to get through the planning stages. It's still in the very early embryonic stages, really, of being talked about, never mind go to planning and go to tender. Then the money has to be raised. There's been no specific amount nailed down yet. There was a figure of 2 million given a few months back at a county board meeting, but again, that hasn't been moved on. And to answer your question about the term of the loan and the overall figure, one delegate did ask at the county board meeting how the new formal arrangement would affect the term of the loan. He was told that figure was not to hand at the moment. That figure did not come into the public domain then, obviously, at the meeting. I followed up with some inquiries last week around the total amount outstanding and the term of the loan, and I was told that Mayo GA were not prepared to release that information, that specific information. So just to tell you how the figure rolls get made, as it were, you then go back to your county board meeting last November, where Liam Moffat did give the information, and you obviously work out the maths from there in terms of repayment. So that's how we arrived at the figure. But I agree. It strikes me as very odd. It does strike me as very odd that those two figures would not be given to delegates or to member of the local media when we inquired. And you know, club delegates as well, you know, they really, I suppose, as Edwin said in the paper today, they need to take more ownership of issues like this. I just get the sense sometimes when the McHale Park loan is brought up at county board meetings at this stage, because we are 14 years down the track. Look, it's not something the delegates want to sit there and talk about for too long. It's not something that interests them in the least. You know, they'd be much more interested in talking about who the next Mayo senior manager will be, as would most people, let's be honest, most Mayo supporters. But one is connected to the other, as you said, Colm.
It is, and that's across the board. I mean, more often than not, stadium redevelopment and centres of excellence, it does create them and us all the time. And it's, you know, people on the street and clubs will say, that's got nothing to do with us. That's your problem. That's your problem as county board officials. And, you know, when you're a volunteer, when you're not full-time positioned, that you can't be at this from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening and 10 o'clock at night and whatever else, it is difficult to stay on top of it when you have, there's other aspects of your life, whether it's work or family or whatever it is that is pulling at you. It is a difficult thing, and these are huge figures. And you look to Cork and the debt there, you know, it's 31.5 million. It's 21.5 million to the banks. It's 10 million to Croke Park. So that probably puts it into a little different perspective. Obviously, Parky Queeve has, you know, it has banqueting and conference facilities and a number of concerts going on there that will help to bring, now that ran them into trouble earlier this year too. So it's on a much different scale. But the debt, nonetheless, is probably in the region of four times what it is in McHale Park. Now, obviously, they've got a lot more from it, and Cork had a 30 million state grant to that. But there are numerous ways that somewhere like someone like the Mayo County Board can generate more money around that. There are innovative ways through various schemes that would help even with a centre of excellence. So I would say that's the priority for Mayo. I know there's lots of concern about the stadium debt. But it is a fine stadium. I'm pretty sure they'll be able to work some kind of arrangement, but there will be a trade-off in terms of, well, you're going to be restricted in what you can spend in your teams. That's probably what it will come to.
this has been brilliant. It's superb to get your perspective on this. We've been mulling over these issues for the last week, and you've given us a great view on the overall as well. Just before you go, are Galway going to win in All-Ireland? Mayo people admire Galway football. People of my generation, their first introduction to phenomenal football was that 98 team. But at the same time, there are rivals. They will have great fun reminding us if they do go up and win an All-Ireland. So whatever your perspective is from Mayo, you are interested in Galway is what I'm getting at, Colm. How good is your chance?
I think Kerry will win. I think the weight of a decade of being suppressed by Dublin and all of those great classic games, but ultimately Kerry coming out on the wrong side of them, there'll be a huge weight lifted off Kerry for the next day. And they're quite an experienced team. They've been to an All-Ireland final. Most of them have been to the 2019 two classic All-Ireland finals that year. Some of them can even trace back to 2015 and 2014. They've just been up in this situation so often, I just don't see them. I can see them lifting and delivering a big performance. Let me put it that way. I think the freedom and the liberation that beating Dublin, the manner of it, I just see them getting the job done here. There's a very, very experienced manager at the helm who's been down this track quite a few times before. I'd say he'll get a lot right in the build-up, and I think they'll give that liberating performance. Galway's time will come. Wouldn't have any doubt about
that.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted to ask you.
They're on the right path. If you look at everything, there's a bit of structure about them. And to be fair, Kieran O'Neill has come in, and you have to equate some of the improvement anyway, in Galway, particularly in how they're defending, to keep Derry, and look, Derry were authors of their own downfall, to keep Derry to within to 6 points was a really, really great defensive performance. Having said that, I thought caution and conservatism and Derry was just played into their hands, and Galway grew into that game, and they'll obviously improve again for the final, but I don't see them being able to keep two Cliffords, Sean O'Shea, I'd say Paul Gainey, if he gets the start this time, it'll be on the condition that he opens up. I think you'll see something from him. I think you'll see something more from Stephen O'Brien too. So that liberation strikes me as something that creates the platform for them to really go at this and win.
Yeah, that's brilliant too. Brilliantly assessed. I mean, this Kerry team does look like the business. One last question before I let you go, because we've overrun on time for you, is the Hawkeye situation, because I know you are a busy man on any given Tuesday, but you have an unusual story this week. How has this come up again? How is this possible, Colm? Are we talking hurling and Gaelic football settings all wrong, or how is this even possible?
I don't think so. I don't think it is that, and I'm not sure, Rob. I can't give you a definitive answer because I don't know. But some of the problems that Hawkeye has experienced recently, the late call on the point for, I think it was Conor Cooney in the Galway Limerick All-Ireland semi-final. If you go back to that, that was actually a refereeing issue. I don't think that was a Hawkeye issue. That was some miscommunication there between the officials, and they just went to Hawkeye for clarification, and it gave it then somewhat after the score. After the shot, they were able to give that clarification. And then sunlight, really acute sunlight was attributed to the, really acute sunlight was attributed to the TJ Reid shot in the Leinster final. This one last Saturday was baffling. I mean, it was so much inside the post. I have heard that some referees have had concerns about Hawkeye's interventions on some shots. It's been happening a lot that it's been called in. I can't exactly trace how often, because obviously you have to be there for every game. It probably has shaken the faith in it a little bit. But from my understanding right now, and this could change, my understanding is it will be back in use on Sunday. Whether there will be that much faith in it, I don't know.
I was in Crow Park, Rob, on Saturday evening. I was working on the Galway Derry match. And look, there were a lot of things that were very odd, obviously, about the Shane Welsh point and the Hawkeye's the role Hawkeye played. But Colm, something that struck me afterwards when I watched it back again and just thought about it, and I'm conscious there's a lot going on, and I suppose a player is standing over a place kick like that, maybe a referee takes that couple of seconds to just gather his thoughts maybe and just get ready for the kick out like everybody else. But it did strike me as odd. Like, Brendan Cawley was looking right down the field in the direction of the kick. It was very obvious it had gone inside the post, that neither the umpires nor the referee pushed back, as it were, or didn't seem to push back on the Hawkeye decision in real time. It just struck me as odd that, I mean, the eye test told you when you were looking right down the field that the kick was over.
Sure. That's where Hawkeye has everybody. There has been ultimate faith, and ultimate faith in that technology can't fail us. Well, technology failed last Saturday, and it failed badly, you'd have to say. And it does shake the faith in it now, is that people will be questioning every score. And no doubt about it, the behind the goals cameras now in Croke Park at both ends will be focusing very, very hard on this from now on. So it is back very much in a trial period, whether you want that for an All-Ireland hurling and football final. It's probably not the ideal way to be going into that, especially in hurling. I mean, ball fizzing through the post there, going high over the post. You need Hawkeye being on the money there. And I'm not sure the fate of the teams will be there. I hope it doesn't come down to it. But I would have to agree with you. I think if you're looking at it and you see, to quote Pat Spillane, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Well, you can say that. If it goes through the posts, it's a score. And that should have overruled. And ultimately, Hawkeye isn't the determining factor here. The referee can overrule Hawkeye. His decision is final. He can overrule umpires. He can overrule Hawkeye. The officials coming down to the stand at halftime, they can only advise, but they can't. What they can't do is tell him, no, you have to. It was down to Brendan Cawley, obviously, to move that scoreboard. And to be fair to him, he did, and did it very quickly. Because a referee's decision in these matters is final. And that's the only thing that it states in the rule book. In the rule book, Hawkeye doesn't really have an official role let's put it this way. There is nothing to say that it has to be accepted. It's an aid to the referee.
Do you know, there would have been a massive philosophical problem if we had been in the old rules where you kicked out from a different position if it was a wide to where you kick out from the... Because I would have been saying, well, that kick out would have been slightly different, so you don't know if Galway would have scored their next point. At least we can say the kick out was from the same position, so what happened afterwards wasn't affected by the decision, if you get what I'm trying to say.
I think, Rob, as well, there's a few Mayo fans we'd know of a negative disposition who'd probably feel, surely it's only a matter of time until Mayo are cost in All-Ireland with a Hawkeye call.
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's the next Mayo way we
finds every other way. Their own goals and all the rest.
Let's go back over those All-Ireland finals. Is there any Hawkeyes in them? I'm going to check. All right, love for that. Colm, always a pleasure. Enjoy
Thank you very much, lads.
Talk to you soon. Take care of yourself.
Okay, thank you.